I think it's probably a big disappointment to everybody who is expecting another Ginsberg-Landau lecture. It's not going to be Ginsberg-Landau, and I could make the obvious connection that I'm using the Fanier inequality at some point, even though I'm not going to write it on the blackboard, but that's about it. So I'm interested today in exploring regularity results for variational problems. So what I want to do is I just want to minimize the functional, say I of u, where I of u is given as an integral over omega f of du dx, and just to fix notation at the beginning, so omega is going to be an open bound set in Rn, u is going to be a mapping from f from omega into Rm, so it's a vector-valued case. Du I will use for the deformation gradient. So this would be the derivative of the components of u with respect to the variables. And this would be, of course, an m by n matrix. And I'm, of course, thinking about models in nonlinear elasticity, so this would be called the deformation gradient. And F would be, of course, a mapping from all M, from M by N matrices into the real numbers. This would be the stored energy density. Pardon me? Where's the gradient? Okay. So I'm interested in general regularity results of variational problems, and of course, I mean, the back of my mind is application to phase transformations on these things, but I really want to restrict to this problem under fairly general growth conditions and coercivity conditions, and I'm more interested in the mathematical statement here. So this would be the stored energy density. And so one motivation for this are models in the spirit of Ball and James and Schipper and Kinderlehrer. So these typical references are Ball and James. Schipper and Kinderlehrer. Who suggests to model solids undergoing phase transitions with such a sort of energy density. So phase transitions in solids. And then typically you have further structure properties of F. So typically you would have invariance under change of observer. So you would have that F of RF is F of F for all R in F of N. And you would have the symmetry of the material, which would be reflected by an additional invariance, the invariance under the point group. So RF R transpose is equal to F of F for all R in the point group. And in particular, if you're thinking about Austenite-Martensite transformations and so on, then these structure assumptions, and of course you're going to assume that F is non-negative. And then these structure assumptions imply a particular form of your zero set K. So typically, K will be a union of copies of SON, which correspond to the different phases. It's a subset of all rotations, and it describes the symmetry of the material. So if you think about a cubic to an orthorhombic phase transition or something, then the high temperature phase would be cubic. And your energy should be invariant whenever you should map the cubic lattice back to the cubic lattice. So typically, K would be a union, a finite union of copies of SON. What? What ball?
Force, yeah.
You're talking about omega? I haven't said anything about omega. Omega is an arbitrary open set that we want simply connected, bounded in Rn. So the zero set of your thought energy density is typically a finite union of copies of SON, which you can identify with the different phases. So the cartoon picture here is, well, that K is this union of wells. So this would be K equal to 3, which would be cubic to tetragonal. And then it's an interesting fact. So this here would be SO, say in three dimensions, SO3U1. And say this would be SO3U3 or U2. And then it's an interesting fact that you find so-called rank 1 connections between these wells. So here you find a matrix A, and here you find a matrix B, such that the rank of A minus B happens to be 1. So this is a so-called rank 1 connection. And this implies an interesting fact. So if you look at the energy here along this line, so we're assuming that the energy is more negative and that it's 0 exactly on K, which is 0 set. So the energy would be of this form, would be 0 here in A and B. But if you take a convex combination of these matrices, the energy would be positive. But the existence of this rank 1 connection here allows you to construct a sequence of functions such that UK is an affine function on the boundary of omega, and such that the energy for the limb of I of DUK tends to 0, which is strictly less than, if you want, the energy in the limit. And this is, of course, a remarkable inequality, because it just tells you that your energy is not going to be quasi-convex, which is, of course, the crucial assumption for using the direct method in the calculus of variations. So this implies F is not quasi-convex. And just for completeness, one's the definition of quasi-convexity. So it's, of course, essentially just the reverse inequality here. So F is quasi-convex if the integral over omega F of F plus D phi is greater than or equal to the integral over omega F of F for all phi which are compactly supported, infinitely many times differentiable, and omega plus values in Rn. And in the framework of elasticity, this would mean that whenever you want to minimize your function with affine boundary data, then the homogeneous affine map is a minimizer of your energy, and whenever you add a compactly supported perturbation, you're increasing the energy, but there's no way that you could lower the energy. Okay, so as I said before, so quasi-convexity, as was pointed out by Morey, it's essentially the necessary and sufficient condition for weak loss in the continuity of your functional, which is essentially what you need if you want to apply the direct method. And so in particular, for these models coming from these applications in elasticity with phase transformations, you cannot use the direct method to establish existence of minimizers. And one approach which was suggested is, of course, to pass to the relaxed functional. So one way would be to look at the relaxed functional. Say, in the sense of Takuranya, so you replace the energy by its quasi-convex envelope of F, which is just the infimum over all phi and C compact infinity omega Rm. Integral of omega F of S plus D phi. But then, of course, if you want to know what the quasi-convex envelope is, you would have to minimize this functional, and that's just as bad as the original functional, with the only exception that here you only have to consider affine boundary data, while of course in the general problem you want of course to prescribe more general boundary data. So that's not really the solution of all problems. So what I want to do is just to ask what can we say about, I would like to say about minimizers for this function, but of course there are no minimizers. So we have to look at the right object, and the right object are gradient young measures which are generated by minimizing sequences. So we do not expect minimizers . So we can talk about regularity for minimizers, but instead we can ask what we can say about so-called minimizing gradient young measures. Which are gradient young measures generated by the sequence DUK of a minimizing sequence UK. For your function I. And some of the most optimistic scenario would be, for example, if you think here about finding your quasi-convex envelope, which is also, of course, the relaxed, so the macroscopic energy of your system. You could wonder whether you could find this by using a minimizing sequence which is uniformly bounded in L infinity. So this would tell you that you would not need to take deformation gradients which are really doing bad things to your material, that you can do it with finite shears or so. And that's of course something you cannot expect. So even if you're thinking about convex functionals, there are these examples by Schwerak and Jahn. So they construct minimizers of convex functionals, which have unbounded gradients. So you cannot really expect uniform L infinity estimates for your sequence, which would correspond to something about the support of your gradient young measure. So they construct minimizers with unbounded gradients. So you cannot expect L infinity estimates. And in the framework of gradient young measures, it would mean that you cannot expect that the support of UX is contained in a compact set K for all X and omega. So the only thing which you could expect would be like on the level of, yeah? No, they show that there exists a minimizer which has an unbounded gradient, which is a form x over mod x to the power alpha minus something. So the only thing you can expect is, so to speak, higher integrability. So you would expect that the minimizing young measure has higher order moments than you would get essentially for free from the fact that it's a minimizing sequence in a suitable Sobolev space. Okay, so let me write down the result. And this will be a little technical, so bear with me on this. So what would be the statement of the result? And before I do this, I often forget to acknowledge my co-authors. So let me write on a blackboard, which I'm not going to erase so soon. This is joint work with Jan Christensen in Edinburgh and partly also with Kevei Shang in Sussex. Okay, so what is the setting here? So P is going to be the growth and the quantivity. So let P be between 1 and infinity. Okay, and then the assertion is that there exists a function theta which goes from P infinity into 0 infinity, and which is strictly positive, so it's never vanishing, so with the following property. Okay, so let Q be a number bigger than P, and this is going to be the higher integrability which I want to get out of my system. And suppose that L greater than, it doesn't matter, then delta which is greater than or equal to 0, and that delta is small enough in the sense that delta divided by L is less than this number theta of Q. Okay, then concerning F, we only need a Carathéodory integrand, so F would be omega times m tensor n into R would be a Carathéodory function. Which satisfies P growth and cursivity. So we would have that C1 C to the power P minus C2 is less than or equal to F of X and F, which is, this is an F. Which is less than or equal to C3 times 1 plus F to the power P. Yes, I also allow dependence on X, yeah. Okay, so these constants are, of course, non-negative. And then, of course, we need to assume something about our energy at infinity, because otherwise we couldn't expect any regularity results. And we will assume that our function is close to the P Dirichlet integral at infinity in the following sense, that the lim sup for F tending to infinity, the sup over all X and omega, F, little f in X and F, minus a multiple of the P Dirichlet energy divided by F to the power P, is less than or equal to this number delta, which has to be small enough depending on how much higher integrability you want to get out of it. Okay, and then the statement is then, for all omega prime which are compactly contained in omega, there exists a constant C, which of course will depend on all these wonderful constants and the distance of omega prime to omega, such that for all minimizing gradient Young measures of the integral on omega f of x du dx, so we allow x dependence here, the following estimates hold. So if you compute the q order moments on omega prime, so if in omega prime integral m tend by n a to the power q d mu x of a dx to the 1 over q bounded by this constant times 1 plus the p order moments on omega, d mu x of a dx and everything to the 1 over p. Okay, so that's the statement. Okay, and let me make some remarks. So in particular, if it's allowed to take delta equal to zero, which implies that you can take all Qs, so you get estimates. So if you can choose delta equal to zero, then all finite order moments are bounded. But the statement does not hold with Q equal to infinity. So even in this case, you will not get L infinity estimates. And at the end of my talk, I will give you an example where you see that you have an unbounded gradient. So see the example. Okay, so another remark is, of course, if mu x happens to be a Dirac mass at almost all x, then you're talking about a minimizer. And more generally, you can, of course, ask about solutions for the Euler-Lagrange equations if you happen to have Euler-Lagrange equations. So so suppose that you can derive Euler-Lagrange equations. Okay, so there's a similar statement for solutions of the Euler-Lagrange equations. So so roughly speaking, it would be along the following lines. So suppose that you have a solution at the divergence of sigma of du is equal to zero, or of x and du. I can allow x dependency as well. And that sigma now is close to the Euler-Lagrange equations, which come from the P Dirichlet energy. So here we would need to assume that the sup for f tending to infinity, the sup x and omega sigma of x and f minus, so h would be the P energy, minus h prime of f, which would be the derivative of f to the p with respect to f, divided by f to the p minus 1, is less than or equal to theta of q. And that you have the corresponding Grossmann conditions, less than or equal to a constant times 1 plus f to the p minus 1. And then the assertion would be that that du is q integrable. So then the integral over omega prime, which is a compact subset, du to the q dx to the 1 over q less than or equal to a constant times 1 plus the integral over omega du to the p to the 1 over p. Okay, so h of p, h of f is f to the p. Sorry. Okay, and I should mention there's, of course, been related work. So in particular, related to this PDE statement, so to speak, there has been work by Daftari and Phillips. Who prove higher integrability for integrants f of a of the form a to the power p plus g of a, where g is rank 1 convex and has growth of order q less than p. So with g rank 1 convex, I didn't say what it means, but it simply means that G is convex along rank 1 lines in matrix space, and G of A less than a constant A to the power Q, with Q strictly less than P. And this is also related to a recent work by Caffarelli and Peral. Related work would be Dostoyevsky-Kalach, and there's Caffarelli and Peral. But they need a uniform closeness condition of the form that uniformly f of x and f minus f multiple of f to the power p. It's small. Okay, so F till 50 or 55, roughly 50. Okay, so I've got to erase something. For our integrand f, there'd be a different coercivity and growth and coercivity. We didn't look into this. We didn't look into this now. Okay, let me say just a few words about the ingredients into the proof. So one ingredient is Ekeland's variational principle. Which allows you to find a perturbed function for which a function closed by is minimizing. And this has been used for the first time in this context, I guess, by Marcellini and Spordone in 1980. And the other ingredient is a suitable generalization of a criterion for higher integrability according to Ivanich. So there is a generalization. Of a criterion for higher integrability. By Tadeusz Ivanich. Oops. And this has the following. So suppose, so this would be the following lemma. That 1 is less than p, less than q, less than infinity. That you have an HP function which can be vector valued. So this can go into a d-dimensional space, RD. And suppose that there exist constants, a tau positive and a constant m positive, such that you have an alternative on all q cubes in omega, so such that for all cubes q subset of omega, you either have that the average is bounded, so the average on q over h to the p dx is bounded by this constant m, or if you go to a smaller cube, which is rescaled by tau, and you integrate h minus its average on this cube to the power p dx, then this is less than a constant epsilon times the integral on q h to the power p, because this epsilon is a funny number, so with epsilon, which depends on p, q, and the spatial dimension n, which would be p to the minus 1 to the 1 minus p times 2 to the minus 2p times p plus 2 times 10 to the minus 5 np cubed. This is one of the fundamental open problems in the field. I think Ivanich would be pretty happy if he knew exactly the optimal amount of high integrability you can get out of it. This constant is certainly not sharp. And this 10 to the minus 5 NPQ isn't looking very encouraging, I agree. But nevertheless, if this happens to hold, then you have the following estimate. If you take omega prime compactly contained in omega, then you can estimate the integral of h to the q dx to the 1 over q by a constant times 1 plus the integral over omega h to the p dx to the 1 over p. And as a remark, so Ivanich's statement, would be this without the without the first alternative. So Ivanich does not allow the first alternative. Okay. So, and then what you do is, in order to prove the theorem, you use an indirect proof, so you use a blow-up argument, and you show that you can verify the assumptions in the Ivanich lemma for elements in your minimizing sequence far enough outside. Then you get high integrability of the elements along your minimizing sequence, and then, of course, this high integrability is passed on to the gradient Young measure and the limit. So the last 5 minutes or so, I want to talk about this example which I mentioned. The last section, which would be this example. Okay, so we are in the special case M is equal to N is equal to 2. And in 2 by 2 matrices, you can write every matrix X as X plus X minus, where X plus is a conformal matrix. So this would be of the form A minus B, B, A. And X minus would be corresponding to the anti-conformer. So this would be C, B, B minus C. Then the following turns out. So there is a proposition 1. Well, if you take a function f from M, this is generally true with, okay, let's say 2 by 2, and to R, it's not generally true, it's only true in 2 by 2. To be defined by f of x is a function g which depends only on the conformal part, g plus, x plus. So then it turns out that the convex envelope of f agrees with its polyconvex envelope, agrees with its quasi-convex envelope, agrees with its rank 1 convex envelope, and it's given by taking the convex envelope of C in X plus. Okay, I didn't really say what polyconvexity is, but that's not that important in this context. So the important thing is that you have really a formula for the quasi-convex envelope, and one formula for the quasi-convex envelope was on the blackboard here. Okay, so then using this, you can prove the following. So suppose that G, 0 to infinity into R, is given and you define f of x to be G in the norm of x plus, and then let G tilde be the largest convex function less than or equal to G with the property that G tilde and 0 is the infimum for t greater than or equal to 0 G of t. And then once more, so the convex hull of f is equal to the quasi-convex hull of f is equal to all the other convex hulls, which would be g tilde, evaluated in the norm of x plus. Okay, so now let me state the following theorem. So let F M 2 by 2 into R given by F of X, which is the distance squared of X to SO2, then you have an explicit formula for FQC, so for the relaxation for the quasi-convex envelope. And this has two parts. It's minus 2 times the determinant of x plus 1 if the modulus of the conformal part is less than 1 over square root of 2. And it's simply the original energy if the modulus of x plus is, of course, bigger than 1 over 2. So moreover, if you choose omega to be the unit ball in R2, then the variational integral I of u, which is given by the integral of omega, the relaxed energy FQC of du dx. So this will be minimized in the Sobolev space W1 to 0 of omega by u of x, which identifying the plane, so let's identify the plane of complex numbers. So u of z would be a constant z bar log z bar. So if you want to write it in real variables, it's x times minus y times the modulus log of r squared. Where c less than or equal to 1/2 is a constant. Okay, and what you see, of course, you have a quasi-convex integrand. So in particular, the affine function would be a minimizer, so you know what the minimum energy is. And this function here gives you the minimum energy, but of course it has an unbounded gradient. And what has it to do with these two propositions I wrote here? So, pardon me? Yeah, well, I'm almost done. So, so the idea of the proof, so to speak, is that you can write, because this decomposition into conformal and anti-conformal part is a orthogonal composition with respect to the standard scalar product in the 2x2 matrices. So you can really write down what the distance squared is of x SO2. So this turns out to be x minus squared plus, okay, you can write it as minus 2 times the determinant of x plus mod x plus squared plus x plus minus square root of 2 squared. Because the determinant is just given, or 2 times the determinant is just given by x plus squared minus x minus squared. That's why you get that x here again. And then, of course, if you compute what du plus is, so the positive part of du, so this is 2c squared over r to the power 4 times, r squared times x squared minus y squared, 2xy, x squared minus y squared. So this is bounded. And if you make the constant c small enough, the modulus of this will always put you into this poorly affine part on your energy. And then, of course, you just integrate out because the determinant is null Lagrangian, and you see what the energy is. Okay, I think that's a good point to stop, and I thank you for your attention.